Hello, good morning, good evening, and good afternoon. And wherever you are in this wide, wonderful world that we live in, you are very welcome to the Global Sales Leader Podcast. I'm your host, and every week we speak in around the areas of sales, sales leadership, psychology, body language, technology, and lots of other different areas that we explore, because it's a fascinating subject, because there's so many elements on this. We're talking about this captivating journey where we bring insights to the forefront of leadership, intersection, and cutting-edge technologies. I love the area of neuroscience. I'm fascinated with that and evolving dynamics in the global market, because a lot more companies are getting involved with understanding how our brains work and how what goes on inside. So join us for this illuminating adventure with Silvia D'Armenio. I probably haven't pronounced it correctly, but I will ask for the correct pronunciation in a few moments. The brilliant mind behind I4 Neuro Leadership. Silvia's expertise in neuroscience and leadership offers a unique perspective of understanding the intricacies of our brains and can define how we approach sales leadership. Together, we can navigate the uncharted waters of this landscape, discovering innovative approaches to practical strategies to enhance leadership skills. God, that was a mouthful. Welcome.
That was a mouthful. Thank you, Jason. Hello, how are you today?
I'm very well. How about yourself?
I'm very well. 6 p.m. here in Gold Coast, Australia. And you almost pronounced my surname correctly. It is Silvia D'Armenio.
Yeah, my accent is pronunciation isn't at its best. First thing in the morning for me, there's obviously 11 hours difference in us at the moment, so that's cool. So I actually discovered you as we were speaking in the background, probably about 5-6 years ago, maybe something like that. I don't know how I discovered you, but anyway, I downloaded and read some of your articles, and then I got your workbook. I actually meant to get something else, but I got your workbook, and it does go through all of some really good stuff, and I really am honored and privileged to go through it, because I like the difference in it. I've ran leadership programs myself. But I like the different way of looking at it, and the deep understanding of how this works. So rather than me telling about your little journey along the way, or your little journey, your big journey, if you give us a bit of an insight how you got to where you are and how you've discovered this new way of methodology and all of that. So I'm fascinated by that.
Okay, thank you, Jason, first of all, for having me. And it is also an honor and a privilege for me to be interviewed by you, because obviously you have a long trajectory interviewing people and you have a lot of knowledge from different domains. And this is how we need to look at life today. We can't narrow down into one aspect of our beings. We really need to be able to tap into various areas. And neuroscience is one of them. And 10 years ago or 12 years ago, it was a very new concept to apply neuroscience to leadership and organizational development. So I'm as a very curious person, I jump on board very early in this journey. And having been in leadership development for 25 years now, the combination of being a biologist, my studies on neuroscience of leadership, and this idea that leadership needs to change as we approach what I call the imagination age, where creativity is the new asset for humans. You know, this 2023 that has passed has been an enormous, it's a different era, it's a different trip, mental trip and practical trip into, you know, using AI tools, which we didn't have before. And in fact, when I created this work, it was 10 years ago, I didn't even ambition that 10 years down the track we'll be having, you know, the post-pandemic, the artificial intelligence. So it kind of confirmed my thoughts that the leadership as we knew it, it was a bit obsolete. And if you, as someone that who has delivered leadership programs, remembers in 1961, Warren Bennis was the first American scholar that started to talk about the art of leadership. Yeah. And since then, there has been enormous amount of authors and models and frameworks from Ken Blanchard to so many. I don't want to leave anyone behind. But if you think about it, most of the leadership models and frameworks have been developed by men, by male brains, that in a way they see the world a little bit different to how women see it. And when I started this journey, it was a moment, a flash of inspiration, I must say, where I thought, what are the competencies that we need to develop in our leaders in the years to come? And I did a 4 years research going around the world, interviewing all sorts of business leaders and scholars and experts in leadership. And what came extremely clear were these four competencies. Like, we want people to perform. We want people to be able to have good relationship with others. That's collaboration. We want people to be able to innovate and also be agile. Today, 10 years later, these four key competencies are in the mouths of almost everybody around the world. People talk about agility. People talk about innovation all the time. So the crucial piece of work that I built with my research was to include neuroscience and to try to explain to people, how do we achieve these competencies? Because it's not enough to tell leaders, oh, you have to perform better or you have to be more innovative. That's not enough. How do I do this? What parts of myself, what parts of my being, what parts of my brain can help me do this? So it was a real work of integration of different disciplines in order to come up with this model called I4NeuroLeader model and methodology that we have been teaching and sharing to with companies around the world.
Yeah, it's... I've worked with global organizations, the likes of Google and others, and they're all taking on part of this because I think it's just so important. I think the number one important thing from all this research that I've done is a leader really has to understand oneself first, making sure that they know who they are, their strengths, their weaknesses, but also what they can do to be more self-accountable for their own actions. So I think the first things first is their own position before they can actually help and do everything with others. But I think the first thing is to really know who you are, what you can do, and where you can go out and learn that self-accountability for your own actions, which I think is the most important thing. And also to learn and grow with what you do. And if you're not good at something, you're not good at something. You get your team that are better at doing what you do. That I know it's the Richard Branson approach in some areas of that. But what's your take on that?
Well, I think that we come to this life not to make money and become millionaires. And that's, you know, a little bit of a fallacy that some business leaders have in the world today. That's the measure of success. And the reality is, if you are destroying people's lives along the way, I think that, you know, we got it all wrong. One of the reasons why people need to know themselves is because if they increase their self-awareness, they will understand how they are impacting on other people's lives and day to day in the office, for example. And without that awareness, it's very difficult to correct anything, to be a better leader, you know, to apologize when you need to apologize. But of course, it all goes back to your moral compass. If your moral compass is to reach positions no matter what and, you know, to accumulate wealth, that's one viewpoint. If your purpose in life is about creating something and leaving something behind and a legacy that your children and grandchildren can be proud of, that's another take on life. And probably I'm talking to the people that have this second perspective, not to the ones that have the first perspective, because you can still be successful. You can be a difficult leader and still be successful in your own eyes or your own, you know, measure. But it doesn't mean that you are bringing people along in the journey.
Yeah, and I think, as you've already said and suggested, bringing people along in the journey is absolutely core. Not leading from the front, but also leading from the sides or the back or whatever. I was just curious, in your introduction, you also mentioned when you first started it, it was all of the methodologies going back decades and all that was mainly designed by men. Stephen Covey's Habits of Highly Successful People and all of that, because that's been taken into a lot of leadership workshops that I've attended as well. And it's probably good that you probably just push that past and go, well, what are the practical applications, whether it's male, female, and it doesn't make any difference, because it really doesn't. There's an exceptional female leaders, and doesn't matter whether where they come from, their education, ethnicity, and all of that doesn't really matter, because people just are extraordinary leaders regardless of where they're from.
Absolutely. So I'm not saying that because people have different gender, they will be better leaders. That's not what I'm saying. Amazing leaders, you know, that are men and women. But what really caught my attention was that women respond really well to this model, and men are following very closely behind. So when we talk about inspiration as one of the qualities essential to inspire people to collaborate with you, and once we understand that there is a synchronicity that needs to occur between how your heartbeat and how the right side of your brain executes the brain waves, and when there is alignment, people seem to be more inspirational. So that requires your understanding of your emotions, your self-regulation, in order to exude the energy that will attract people to you. Sometimes I ask my clients, why do you think that people will follow you? What makes you think that people want to follow you? If you left this job today and you go across the road, would people follow you, or they will say goodbye, thank you very much? And that comes from, you know, your doses of inspiration. If you are the type of leader that people want to be with you, no matter what position you have, this means that people are able to trust you. They're able to tell you when there are problems. They don't hide the problems under the carpet, and you are able to build a more solid team, a team that really rows in the same direction and not in every direction. So inspiration is one of these abilities that belongs to this model. The other one is imagination, which, funnily enough...
How do you mean by that? What do you mean by that specifically?
Imagination or...
Because
the model... So the four competencies that I mentioned, performance, collaboration, innovation, and agility, they have a framework of 16 pillars that sit underneath. And there are four pillars that are... I call them the I4 pillars. That's why the name. And they are integration, inspiration, imagination, and intuition. So when we talk about integration, for example, is the integration of the different components of the brain and body, how your whole being is working in unison. If parts of your brain are not working well, or if, you know, your mind is somewhere else and your brain is not, you know, on really in the moment doing what it needs to do, and then you completely disconnect from your body and you sit 10 hours a day and you don't move your body, for example, that affects the integration of who you are, the biology sitting behind the task that you need to do. So when we do the assessments that correspond to this model and we teach people the strategies, and some of them are in the workbook that you purchase, there is a very concrete path. Exactly, that one, that's the whole model. There's a very concrete path of what you need to do in order to integrate yourself so you can perform at your best. So it's not coming from the perspective of psychology or personality assessments or personality traits, because one of the things that we notice now is that once you explain to people that the neuroplasticity of the brain, and that we are able to grow new cells even if you are, you know, 80 years of age, and our brain changes all the time. You read a new book and then your brain changes. You listen to this podcast and your brain changes because you're making new connections. So that puts people in the perspective that they can embrace change and they don't have to be the same person they were a year ago, or six months ago. And when we used to do assessments of personality, in a way, people get locked in their mind in terms of, oh, this is the way I am, and I don't, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. And how
and
do
we've
you...
heard that loads of times, haven't we? I know I hear it all the time. Well, this is the way I am. I've been doing this for 30 years, and I like the way I am. And you start to think, well, something's not quite right. Something that you have to adapt and change because life moves on. If you, exactly. if the example is, if you go to a doctor that doesn't still study medicine, would you trust them? If they're using old tactics which were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, would you go to them? Or would you trust them or would you connect with them? Because going to them, you start to go, well, I'm not being fixed by you. You're not giving me the latest insights or whatever. And it's the same as us.
The same thing happens with us as leaders, and the same happens in the field of leadership.
Yep.
We cannot be teaching models or frameworks from 20, 30 years ago because the amount of information that has emerged from neuroscience and neurobiology is so enormous that we can't ignore that. One of the things that, for example, we now know is, you know, and this is 5 to 7 years ago, that we call the brain, the gut, the second brain, and how it really works in alignment with the head brain and with the heart brain. And, you know, we can't separate the body from the head brain. We need to learn how the microorganisms that live in our gut will determine the mood we have the next day, depending on the food we eat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you have
the neurons in my stomach, according to the lecture.
Absolutely. There's neurons. They are all united by the vagus nerve that starts, you know, coming from the back of the brain into the heart, the major organs and the gut. So if you are dealing with someone that is extremely moody all the time and it happens to be your boss, you know, we talk a lot about toxic bosses. Mm. What happens if this guy has the terrible diet of, you know, eating fast food every day and his neurotransmitters are not working in the best and he's depressed? So he doesn't tell you he's depressed, but he's a very moody guy that you don't even, you have to walk on eggshells. So understanding all this new world, because it is a new world, and incorporating it into leadership practices and strategies, not only is fascinating, and it fascinates most people that I teach or I coach, but also gives you a new lens to look at behavior. Mm. And it's so interesting because if I tell you, Jason, you need to stop drinking the water that you're having in this moment in the way.
You call me out.
People don't want to change behavior just because you tell them to do so. We have tried to do that for many, many years, and it hasn't worked. But once you explain to people how to optimize their brain function and how to, you know, get to an older age in a much better condition, they start to become interested. And I think that the well-being aspect that this model and the new knowledge is bringing into this equation of leadership is very appealing to people, and it's very interesting because what else do we have? Like, if people don't want to change behavior, how do we create better leaders and new leaders?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot about wellness, whether it's understanding yourself from a different point of view, but something has to happen for you to want to change, that anchor, that trigger moment where you start to think of, even for myself, is something's not working. What do I need to do to change? There's something that I need to learn to grow. And whether it is that the wellness, whether it's the accountability, or whether it's emotional intelligence, is going, hang on a minute. And we know that a lot of really good leaders have high elements of emotional intelligence and other intelligence, but you can be really intelligent, but not have that self-awareness. I've worked with people that have high levels of intelligence, but the emotional intelligence is not there. They're not adaptable. Yes. They're not changing. The empathetic communication that they have with people is not very good. So, but they were super smart, but there's something not quite working, whether it's the communication or the communication to themselves, which is sometimes the stories that we tell ourselves, mm-hmm. is it's that saying, if you believe you can, if you believe you can't, then you're right. And that same old saying, which is so true.
Absolutely. One of the key elements in terms of increasing self-awareness, I firmly believe that is feedback. If you don't get 360 feedback, that has to be anonymous, because nobody is able to digest the feedback if it's face-to-face from someone that is very close to them. So when we do these assessments and people receive, like, our assessment takes people from family and friends and peers and subordinates and you know, managers, clients, suppliers, so 8 different rating categories. When people receive the results, in a way, we put the answers in using positive psychology, so it's a positive thing that they're receiving, and they may get, you know, a green, a red, or a number. And people go, wow, I didn't expect that. But it doesn't crush their souls. It just gives you enough information for them to want to explore why people are perceiving them like that. And, you know, feedback is never 100% true. It's a perception that people have of what you are displaying. But it starts the inner conversations that we all need to have in order to increase our self-awareness. Without reflection, without introspection, self-awareness is not possible. And these type of tools help you in the process. And it's a good way to calibrate the brain.
I think feedback is essential for what we do, good, bad, or indifference. And then we have to work out, okay, because we all can get happy sheets after work, doing a workshop or whatever. And that's not really what we want. We want to find out. And that's one of my bugbears. Is I'm getting a happy sheet. I don't want a happy sheet. I want a sheet that tells me what I need to do to improve on what I've done. Is there any other elements that can help me grow to be better communicator, better listener, better something or something that I can go ahead and go, well, I need to do something. I need to work hard. Because I know, probably like yourself, I'm like a dog with a bone. I want to do it. I need to do it. And I have to do it because I know for myself, there's certain elements that I need to improve on, which I think
we all have. We all have, and that's the interesting journey in life, you know. And I will tell you this anecdote, because when I was like in 2008, I went through a very dark period in my life, and I suffered from depression. A lot of things happened around me, and they really sent me into a downward spiral. Yeah. So my children were saying, "Mom, you're too emotional." And I said, "Well, I am emotional. I'm a Latin person, so of course I move my hands, I speak loud, I cry. You know, I'm very expressive." And they said, no, you are too emotional. And that sent me on a journey of getting my brain scan in America and looking at my blood flow and to identify what was wrong. I am a person that I'm very healthy. I don't do, you know, alcohol, drugs, or anything like that. So I couldn't understand how someone that works in the self-awareness space could not see that I was being too emotional and what was happening inside my brain. And I can tell you, Jason, my levels of self-awareness increased, you know, 5 times after having my brain scan and looking into what was happening. And then 4 years later, I had a second scan, and, you know, the areas of the brain that were extremely active kind of dissipated, and, you know, I had a better brain. So amazingly, we think we are 100% okay most of the time, but the reality is we leave trails behind, you know, and people can tell us we don't want to hear it because it creates discomfort. It's not aligned, and we become a bit defensive and territorial about our own behavior. So one of the best ways to develop your leadership is to welcome feedback that can give you a roadmap to what you need to adjust or to change. It could be a small, simple thing, but it makes a difference in your journey as a leader.
Yeah, I completely concur. And you also mentioned health as well as that. And I think that's equally what we do, what we eat. It makes a huge impact, but also our sleep and our sleep patterns make a massive impact. And then exercise, we know exercise, we got whichever way that you want to take your exercise. And there's a lot of research behind meditation. However you see your meditation, sometimes meditation can be just going for a walk and being in nature, being in green space, Like, you can go into a trance very quickly and have, there's a lot of research also around movement as well. Once you're moving, they say if you're sitting down all day, the brain's not going, the blood's not going to the brain.
Correct.
So if you're moving, at least the blood is going directly to the brain, and you can think a lot more clearly about certain things, certain subjects. My best thoughts is going out into nature, and I meditate as well. So there is two sides to that. So I'm curious on your take on that, and anything else with what you've suggested in your methodology and what you're doing in your work life, because I'm fascinated by that.
Okay, thank you. Let me complete the other two pillars that I was talking about. Yeah. So one is intuition, and I briefly mentioned the role of the gut and how it influences the head brain. And, you know, there's a lot of research being done in intuition now, 10 years after I have put that ability or a skill in the model. Before, intuition was a taboo word. But once you start to socialize this with people start to go, actually, you know, my best decisions in life, I took them with my gut feelings, or I follow my heart. And, you know, this is information that we completely disregard in business. But if you have people in your team that are highly intuitive, because some people are more intuitive than others, don't shut them down. Listen to them. Ask them questions and be more curious about why is it that people are telling you that. There must be a reason. And I won't go into too much detail because that's another world, which is it's really fascinating. And then we have imagination, which, you know, is the cognitive ability that allows us to visualize, conceptualize, and explore, thoughts, ideas. And then we use our creativity, which is the transformative process to make that idea come to fruition. And those are important abilities that we all need to develop to become or support a very innovative culture. If you don't innovate in today's world, you're dead. Like, you know, 2023, ChatGPT, you're using it. By the time I got to the end of the year, my children are saying, you know, there are like 1,000 new applications that are using AI. Look at, you need to look at this and look at that. Like, it's too late. I've already, fell in love with ChatGPT. I'm like, do I have to move from that in order to explore another 1,000? So we need to be agile, and we need to move, and we need to innovate, and we need to be open to lead teams of creatives. And this is one of the biggest challenges in leadership. How do we go from the command and control to the knowledge era and then to the imagination age, where leaders need to be able to feel comfortable by asking ideas from their teams and facilitating the process. Absolutely. Without thinking that the ideas cannot come from members of the team? Some leaders still are having difficulty with this. They don't know how to do it.
I was going to say, actually, because the way I look at that is ideas come from everyone from the team, but also outside of the team as well, depending on the size of the organization. Yes. Bring people in from accounts, bring people in from marketing, bring people in for customer service and other areas, because the leader doesn't know all the answers, and they shouldn't know all the answers, because they're just steering the ship. But other people are on the board of the ship, but you just don't know where the ideas come from. So get everyone in.
To funnel these ideas and to sort the best ones and bringing people to collaborate without getting defensive or too precious about who gave the idea, it's an art. It's not that simple. And, you know, one of the books and the stories that really comes to mind is the story of the Navy SEALs and how much they spend to train a Navy SEAL, which is like an astonishing $500,000 for each Navy SEAL. They reach a point where the team, the brains of each team member are so in sync that, for example, if you know more than me when we go into a particular house about what needs to be done, the leadership automatically goes to you. Nobody complains about that. And I'm like, we are so far away from that in a corporate environment, because people get accustomed to a particular position and they like the flavor that power provides. And yeah. they forget that they are there to serve others. They are not there for their own ego. And absolutely. I think we need to do and invest more in training of people, because it's, in the case of the Navy SEALs, it's a matter of life or death. If you work for a bank, it's not a matter of life or death, but it's a matter of making decisions that can affect the customers big time, for example. So I have worked for a bank, and sometimes I felt, my God, like people really worry about each of these problems as if it was life or death, and it's not, but it can still affect others. So this in terms of, you know, a very quick overview of some of these abilities that we probably need to be incorporating more in this new era. And the other aspect in terms of the things you mentioned, nutrition, movement, sleep, meditation, and breath is my fifth one. You know, one of the pleasures of my life has been to meet Dr. Fred Travis because of a documentary I produced called Make Me a Leader. You can watch it in YouTube for free. And Dr. Fred Travis has been a meditator for 40 years, and he's the person in the world who has studied transcendental meditation the most. And of course, he put his EEG and he told me, close your eyes and get into it. And, you know, the things that you understand once you talk to someone so experienced. For example, you know, the main goal of meditation is to produce alpha brain waves in the range of 8 to 10 hertz. Mm-hmm. So because in meditation, you learn to produce these alpha brain waves, and it takes you to a state of being calm and alert at the same time and being able to solve problems more efficiently. You are able to, if you practice meditation every day, you're able to produce these alpha brain waves when you are with your eyes open in the middle of chaos or a meeting that is very difficult, and then take things at a much better pace for your brain in order to digest information and provide a solution if that's what's needed. When most people, you know, if you take that and then you take the extreme, having road rage when a car cuts you off. And that is because you have no control of your mind. You haven't paid any attention to your emotions, neither how to handle your emotions. So if you don't want to have road rage or something similar at work, then you need to practice meditation, because it will develop your mind and it will quieten your brain, which is what you want. So that in regards to meditation, because people don't understand these simple basics that really, once you understand it, then you go, ah, that's what I'm doing when I'm meditating. That's it. You're not relaxing and going to sleep when you're meditating. It's an active process of producing these alpha brain waves.
Yeah, absolutely concur. I think the different states is the alpha, theta, delta states. Yes. Yeah, and you go into the different levels and you're not quite asleep, but you're just there in the
slowing the
just slow. You're not quite gone off to sleep, but you're quite there. So if you the question I always like to ask is, if you were interviewing you, what sort of questions would you like to ask you?
That's a very good question. I haven't thought about this before, so let's see if I can improvise it. I'll probably ask myself, why are you so passionate about this? Because I could be studying mammals in the sea. I don't know. I could be doing something else.
Yeah.
But I'm an educator. I started educating since I was 16 years of age, and I have done many different types of teaching. But the one that really hooked me was leadership development, because when you are talking to people who have at least developed their personal leadership or their self-awareness, conversations are different. Conversations are more interesting, or at least I find them more interesting. Mm-hmm. And there's less defensiveness. There is more collaboration towards solving problems that affect us all as a society. And when I think about Davos, for example, one of the things of the complaints about the attendees to Davos last year was the lack of listening, the lack of active listening. And I'm thinking, why don't these people get a leadership development course before attending Davos? Then the outcomes of these conferences would be much more fruitful. Why don't politicians get a leadership development and 360 feedback done on them?
Oh, there's another course in that one, I'm afraid. I think that's global.
Exactly. So people are better prepared to lead a country. We're talking about people in leadership positions, okay? Mm-hmm. Which doesn't exclude you as an individual that doesn't have a leadership position. You are the leader of your own life. You lead your children, your couple, your partner, or you are led by your partner. And it's important to have that metacognition, the ability to observe yourself, what you're doing from moment to moment. I feel that many people in leadership positions today, whether it's companies or whether it's governments, they have no metacognition, no self-awareness, and they just go with the flow. And it's extremely sad because they do make decisions that affect millions of people.
Yeah, and the decisions that they make is sometimes it comes from a place of ego as opposed to a place of understanding what others actually want. And I think when we start to have our active listening heads on is to really know what people want and really understand others as well as understanding ourselves. But the more we can actively listen, but also listen with our eyes and really understanding people's body language as well as, because I think we know that there's a lot of huge amounts of nonverbals going on there, and really understanding if they're stressed, noticing the telltale signs about that. And that's all listening, as well as much as we are listening with those two things that we have on our head, which is also, I think everything has to be congruent. And some of the things that you've already said is being inspiring, being transparent, showing trust, but also being self-confident that you also know stuff, but you're not also given all the answers all the time, is making sure that others can bring in their own ideas and having their own self-awareness that it's okay to be okay. They talk about psychological safety. And I think that's equally as important for people to own up and show up as well within what they're saying. And I think we're both being congruent with everything that you said. I think it's all high performance and getting that feedback on. Is there any one other golden gem that you can give forward to our audiences today?
Let me think for a second. I would say that, you know, if you're listening to this, it's important to look inward and see what aspects of yourself are the positive ones that you can contribute to the world. Because, you know, the brain is a very complex structure. It's amazing what we can do with the brain, you know, more than what we ever thought we could do. But it also can trick us into providing or generating thoughts that are not very positive, or that we don't have to believe every thought we have. That's one of the things I learned from neuroscience. We have a lot of thoughts. Some of them are borrowed from someone else that it may be around us or has a big influence on us. So the ability to discern what thoughts you have, the ability to eliminate or delete the ones that are not useful to you, and the ability to choose the thoughts that serve you the best is something that we all can do, we all need to do in order to preserve the important things in life for us, for future generations, and, you know, for the people that interact with us. If you are giving other people grief on a daily basis, if you are complaining, if you are gossiping, if you are being negative, you're not contributing to the greater good, neither to yourself. Mm. You know, you want to get to 80, 90, or 70 with the best brain that you can have. And that takes a little bit of work. That takes, you know, the good night's sleep, the good nutrition. And that's something that we all can do to improve the quality of our lives. So there is a little bit of everything for everybody in this topic.
Yeah, I think this conversation, we need to carry on. I'd love to have you back on again, because I feel that we're just at the very tip of the iceberg, and there's so much more I want to say. And as the research goes, we get between 50 and 70,000 thoughts per day. And I probably had that within the last 40 minutes.
Exactly. But one thing for sure, like we have seen with our EEG machine that we have acquired from America, as soon as you close your eyes, you start to produce alpha, and that calms your brain. So if you are suffering from a lot of stress, which it seems to be the majority of people complaining about the same thing, just close your eyes a few moments and take a few deep breaths. That will calm your brain. It takes approximately 6 to 10 seconds to allow to minimize the impact or the activation of your amygdala inside the brain. And you know, you're much nicer to deal with if you do that.
And change your position and your location. That's always something that I learned. I don't know about your thoughts on here. When you're wanting creative thinking, go to a place with higher ceilings, because I don't know what it is. There's a direct correlation between space and where you are. And if you want critical, more focused fit, you have a lower ceiling or a lower place or smaller. Mm. And that's something that I've read fairly recently, and I've tried it, and it does work.
And if you think about temples and churches, they have all been built with, you know, these structures that it gives people the expansion of their mind. Another way to activate your creative thinking is to, if you have an idea, take a little cube and just look at the six sides of the cube and give six different perspectives to your idea. Challenge your ideas, because you don't have to, you know, carry on with the idea that first pop into your mind. You need to kind of analyze it a little bit and see what's the best angle for that idea.
Ah, that's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on today. Like the time difference and all of that, it makes so much of an impact that you've shared some really good knowledge and insights today. And keep up with the great work that you've done.
You.
And how can people find out more about you from the audio listeners that you're actually listening today?
Well, they can visit our website, aboutmybrain.com. I have the most recent book is called Brain Friendly Leadership, The 9 Habits of a Future Fit Mind. They can watch the documentary Make Me a Leader in YouTube for free, or they can, you know, complete one of our certification programs. We have one coming up in Bali in November that will be announced very soon. And it's all about how to develop these abilities for a better life. That's what we are trying to do.
Thank you so much. You've listened to the Global Sales Leader podcast. I'm your host. Every week we speak to phenomenal people from around the globe, but I actually handpick who I want to speak to. So I'm always very honored with the people that I do get to speak to, because it's a passion of mine. And I want to make sure that whoever listens to take one thing away from it, adapt it, learn it, and create that ripple effect going forward. So this is what this podcast is all about. It's about learning different ideas, perspectives, and so on and so forth. So thank you once again.
You're most welcome. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Jason.